Hi, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm interested in talking to people who are interested in talking to people who are interested in having a conversation about their future. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. So I'm very excited to welcome my guest today to Recruiting Trailblazers. Patrick Surmeyer is the CEO of Luxus Plus, which is Florida's only multi-vertical recruitment firm. He's also the co-founder of Privy, which is a career coaching platform for employers and employees. So welcome to the podcast, Patrick Surmeyer. How are you, Patrick?
Having a good day, Marcus. I'm glad we got a chance to finally chat. And I think I mentioned to you, I've been listening to your podcast for a long time. Our team has enjoyed that almost on a weekly basis as we have that discussion. And so to be able to actually talk to you live is pretty great.
That's great. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. And we're going to have a fun chat about your journey and, you know, what's going on in the marketplace and probably something about ChatGPT in there somewhere, hey, I'm sure. Yeah. But first, what do you mean by your Florida's only multi-vertical recruitment firm?
Well, what I mean by that, I think in should be in Orlando is what it means. But what we mean is our vertical base of what we work in based on the specialties of recruitment and the multiple offerings of the services that we offer. So within our specialty industry, we happen to be a small just subset, not because of the recruitment that we do, but just because locally in Orlando, we just don't see much competition. Now, we do work nationally, but for the most part, there's very few people that are offering similar to what we do here in Central Florida.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Now, you took your whole company remote in 2019, which was before the pandemic, which was quite a bold move actually back then. But of course, it's become a lot more normal since then. What prompted you to do that? And how's it all worked out for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I started Luxus in 2018, me having had experience as an agency recruiter, the first thing you think about if you're going to start a business is let's get an office space and let's do all the things with that. And certainly I went through all that, all those steps, getting the furniture, getting the setup, the IT. I mean, all the things you do, going from scratch. And I actually love that part of the business. It's a lot of fun. Almost immediately from the day we moved in, I felt a gut feeling that I made a mistake because right. I knew that remote work was starting to progress. At that time, WeWork was certainly all the buzz from a shared workspace environment.
Yeah.
And what I was looking at was a potential option to do a hybrid of that, you know, out of our office in Central Florida. So we got into a space much larger than what we needed, but we did that with the intent of having kind of a shared workspace environment for recruitment. And we had multiple companies working in out of our office, but selfishly, I knew that that was the trend should have been to move towards remote work. Now, the other thing was we had to learn the hard lesson when I made that move in 2019 that not everyone is cut out for remote work, wants it, desires it. In most agency recruiting, you have a lot of younger staff, maybe fresh out of college, maybe somewhere in their early to mid 20s, and they really enjoy coming to the office. They love seeing people. They love the option of going somewhere else from their home as opposed to their one bedroom apartment with white walls and no furniture in it. And so, you know, when I look at it, we made that move to go remote. I personally was super excited about it because I saw the future where we're going to go. But we almost within about a 4-month window lost the majority of our staff members. And then we had to turn over and actually find people who wanted to work remote. But then sure enough, the pandemic comes in March of 2020 and it forced all of us to do it anyway. So it was just an ironic situation.
Yeah. I mean, do you think today, I've always thought of agency recruitment as a team sport. And I think given the opportunity to go back and work in an office, I think a lot of agency recruiters would say yes, because you learn so much through osmosis and there's the camaraderie and just obviously the instantaneous nature of everything. And, you know, the way we communicate in the office is so very different to how we do it over Zoom. You know, you don't have to book time on someone's calendar. You can wander over and see them. There's so many benefits, I think, that we swept under the carpet when everybody got so excited about going remote. Do you think it's better for an agency recruiter to be remote? Or do you think many recruiters want to come back to the office?
Well, I guess it probably has a lot to do with what you value most, or what in this case I valued most. I know there's trade-offs. There's no doubt about it. You and I have talked about Casey J. Cox and what he's done to help us. But, you know, speaking with Casey, he even referenced that we miss out on that camaraderie, that ability to feel that heat of someone else who's doing really well and feel the successes. When I considered, call it the pros and cons, you know, the trade-offs of the value of working remote versus working in the office, and I weighed both of those, it seemed to be, I think, a stronger, not just a little bit, but a stronger lean towards remote work. One of them was, I'm a big believer in the idea of efficient work and making sure that you're scheduling your time, scheduling your day, and knowing what you're trying to accomplish in a day. Something about being in office almost allows you to blend in wasted time. And yeah. I really didn't like that. As much as I love the camaraderie, and we still kept, you know, created a version of that, I just didn't think it was worth it when it came to some of the factors that we were dealing with in the office.
Yeah. I mean, the other reason I think people have always liked assembling, you know, an office full of recruiters is because I think leaders have always felt that they're more in control when they have their staff in place at their desk and they can manage them and, you know, get the old whip out and, like, you know, 100%. More subs, more calls. And it's probably a lot harder. Well, it is a lot harder managing people and managing metrics and KPIs, et cetera, when you're remote. How have you managed to get through all of that?
Well, it's a work in progress. I can tell you when we first did it, we were not prepared. It was a move that I made without thinking through some of the topics that should have been planned out a little bit differently. So I'll give you one where I think we're better today than we were, say, 3+ years ago, is online training. So not only are we coming up for training on a regular basis with the staff on a virtual meeting, but having a video library of screen share where we've got training modules and steps throughout the recruitment process, sales process, even, you know, sourcing administrative process. We now have a library of videos of most commonly asked questions where someone can go and get that information and be able to be up and running within a short period of time. And I think that has helped us quite a bit. Obviously, the ability to use screen sharing tools has been a big factor within this business. But ultimately, in the end, I found that one of the biggest factors that you must have when your business, when it's fully remote, is that the people you're working with must have a clear definition of what they're trying to accomplish every day. I've found that I've changed the model to be project-based work as to what you're accomplishing on a daily basis, measurable tools, as opposed to busy work or anything that might have been in between. Because in the past, it was very much a question of, well, we had these meetings and different things that distracted me, and I was only able to accomplish such and such in a day. We're just very clear about our expectations, and we like to hire people that feel good about that. And so it's, you know, it's taking its time.
Are you a fan, or do you use activity KPIs and metrics to measure the success of your people? And
we did use activity KPIs, and we still measure them for the sake of understanding which of our reach outs, prospecting, are working best. But now we have moved away from the activity KPIs, and we look at the, I call, back-end KPIs related to interviews, offers, and placements, because we're just in some of the markets we work in, we're in a candidate shortage business like many other people. We realize that we're looking at a myriad of tools that we're using to potentially gain attention first. Okay, so we're trying to gain attention. Then we're going to have to win that battle. We've got to win the interest battle. And after the interest battle, we're hoping to move someone down the pipeline. So when we look at it now, it's a matter of prospect as much as necessary to get to this result. But in the past, we were so much emails, calls, text messages, those kinds of things.
So, I mean, outcomes are obviously more important than the activities that drive them. But when the outcomes fall short, it's interesting to know as a leader, you know, what's the reason behind that shortfall? And it's usually a shortfall in activity, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I'll give you one KPI that's new for us. I know it sounds a little bit away from the personalization, but you have heard you talk to other people before, and I'm a believer in this. Do you still believe that few people will pick up their cell phone, or are you a believer that people will pick up their cell phone?
I don't know whether I sit in either camp particularly firmly, but I mean, I occasionally pick up a number that I don't recognize. Not that often, but I do. And I'm kind of a fan of cold calling. I just don't know whether it pays off these days.
Right.
As I've said on the podcast so many times, nobody wants to be sold to. So when somebody that I don't know does call me up and I happen to pick up the phone, I'm already on my back foot. You're going to have to be extremely good. I mean, look, I'm a nice guy and I grew up cold calling. So I'm always going to be extremely polite to anybody who I pick the phone up to. But I'm still, like everybody else, I'm very hard to sell to. So I don't know. I mean, I've spoken to all sorts of recruiters who claim that cold calling really works well for them. And, you know, surprisingly, especially sort of up the food chain at the executive level, it's actually a tactic that's used very successfully because guess what? Executives apparently do pick up the phone.
I would agree with that.
But I think if you're calling software developers, you're going to be banging your head against a brick wall for the most part.
Well, and so to that point, what you just said, we looked at like what was the ROI on cold calling, and we've even moved away from the phrase cold calling. I don't even believe there is such a thing as a cold call as a recruiter. If you have emailed this person, sent them a LinkedIn message, possibly SMS, maybe another form of social media, if you've tried to attempt them in those formats, your phone call at this point is a warm phone call. I mean, it's a, hey, Marcus, it's Patrick Sturmeyer. Does my name sound familiar? Because it should, you know? But what we came to realize was that—
Because I've been stalking you.
Well, at the ROI level of cold calling, it was so low that we adopted a voicemail drop, a ringless voicemail, where we actually drive and direct people towards our LinkedIn messages and our emails. So they can hear our voice and who we are, a real live person, although it's not a personalized message. It would just say, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I'm calling. I represent this company. You'll probably see my LinkedIn message. I just wanted you to hear my voice so you get to know who I am. Would love to get a reply or maybe a reply to email so I can chat with you. But that was one form of a reach out that the ROI was as good as a cold call because we weren't getting people to pick up the phone. So
yeah. I think that's, you know, the interesting thing about recruiting these days is that it used to be the skill set that you needed was the number one skill set, which is still true today.
Yeah.
Is the ability to be able to communicate and build relationships.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that's where the rubber meets the road when you get on the phone with somebody for the first time. But in addition to that, now you also have to be a pretty good copywriter or writer because you are writing and you are trying to attract the attention of people before you can have a conversation with them. You have to attract their attention to generate some interest in having that conversation. How are you going about doing that these days? What are you doing differently or successfully? And how does your team sort of go about doing this? Yeah.
Well, you had on a couple of weeks ago, you had Joel Lougie on your podcast. And I know interesting about him, he would be the recruiter that everyone knows about. And whether you could quote his name or not, you know exactly who he is in his content.
Yeah.
And many of our team is connected to him as well. We enjoy his content. But the area that we had the ability to grow the most in, all of us collectively, both as a company and individually, was through our social interaction, not just in the idea of recruitment. You know, as I mentioned a couple times, it's all about winning the attention battle first and then, you know, going from there. And so we just had come to the realization, you know, collective as a group, that we need to start being active on LinkedIn first and interacting with our network just to be able to kind of see what comes from it, you know, add value in some different format. And that's the area that we're growing in the most at this moment. Although, you know, company-wide, we do put out postings and different newsletters and such. So we had a few pieces under our belt collectively, but individually as a recruiter, for each person on our company, we realized that was the area that we had the ability to grow the most and actually make the biggest impact.
So when you say that's the area that you're growing the most in, you're following the example of people like Joel Lougie. You are growing your branding efforts and really focusing the attention of your recruiters on branding themselves on LinkedIn so that they're communicating regularly with all their followers and connections. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about what I mentioned earlier about, you know, all the potential avenues that a recruiter has to reach prospects, candidates or talent, you know, we're doing that through email, through text, through phone calls, through voicemail drops, through LinkedIn. We're certainly prospecting through all the areas that we're obtaining our talent. But so when I reference the biggest area of growth, like the area that we probably lack the most on and could see the biggest ROI of our time and effort now is going to be through that aspect. Because although it's not a direct measurable piece until you start to see where the business comes from, we just thought that was a great way for us to start getting attention in the format of either a company brand or a personal brand as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you encourage everybody to do this on a daily basis? Is everybody out there posting, you know, a few times a week?
Yeah. So I set the, you know, obviously it all starts with the leader. So I had to set the tone. I told them, I said, I'm going to post every day moving forward. And I've been doing this now for about 3 weeks at this moment. And I took some of Joel's pieces where he talked about, would it be industry information and some of the, I think he referenced four different topics of where you can actually post information. Now, our audience isn't recruiters. Our audience, although I have a lot of recruiting connections, for each of us, our audience is our ideal prospect for ourselves. And so, you know, I know that people, data drives some of the interest. And so we start to look at that. And if one of us comes up with a good post, we have kind of a group software that will post out for everyone individually and through a company-wide as well. But we do encourage everyone to post and then come back with some results. Like, I don't mean results of how much business you got from it or candidates that were interested, but just what kind of interaction? Is it starting to make trends? And are you starting to get maybe more responses? Because I'm a believer that, especially in these days, we're getting a lot of spam messages. Everyone's getting them in some format. Sadly, it's having making us drive back towards maybe a LinkedIn that's verified and has a lot of kind of content in it. Because if someone can see that, that's you, at least it's the closest point of a real interaction until you get with them live.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think the whole point of your LinkedIn feed is to try and stay top of mind with everybody that you've bothered to connect with. Yeah. Until ultimately you want to take that conversation, you know, offline and have a real chat with them on the phone or over Zoom or something.
Yeah, like for me, I had built up over years of being a recruiter all this network, but
yeah,
I just wasn't in the business of being active with that network.
Yeah. What else have you been doing in terms of outreach, in terms of personalization, in terms of writing, in terms of style to drive better outcomes when it comes to responses in times, especially where a lot of people on LinkedIn Recruiter have been complaining that their response rates have been declining massively over the last couple of years?
Well, you know, I've noticed this. So obviously in recruitment, all of us are trying to do mass reach out while keeping the personal piece to it. And there's that blend that everyone's trying to balance. And in the end, because we're a people business, we're people selling people to people, like there's nothing stronger than a personal reference. There's nothing stronger. Like perfect example. If when one of our messages, the title reads referred by, you know, John Smith, whoever that person might be, our response rate's through the roof, you know, because we were looking, and I know as recruiters, we're always asking for referrals. That's not the case. We're looking for the ability to reference another person in our messaging and our ability to reach out from that individual person, because that starts the dialogue and we just get a better response rate. We found when it comes to business development that depending on what services we're offering, you know, when we're referencing success stories, that has the highest response rate of anything. A success story with a competitor of somebody else, another company, or a success story of someone just like them, say it's a job candidate, and we're referencing, you know, call it a senior architect, project manager, and another person just like them in their city. Everyone wants to feel like, oh, wow, you work with people just like me, although they know it, but some of our messaging is so stale that you just, it doesn't really resonate. And so we worked on a few things in the way we actually message people to make sure that it's like incredibly fine tuned. Now our response rate increases incrementally. It's not like I'm saying we're going from, you know, 10% to 40%, but I mean, at least it's a higher response rate for that purpose.
Yeah, that's interesting. In our pre-conversations, you said you wouldn't mind if I asked you a couple of questions about failures.
Yeah.
Can you recall any early situations or failures that really impacted you from a learning perspective?
Yeah, I can list probably more than we have time for. And interestingly enough, I feel as though I separate my brain between the failures I had as an individual producer and the failures I had maybe as a manager and the failures I had in even, you know, growing and running a business for the first time. You know, I started in the business much like all of us, got referred in by a friend and didn't know it. But when I got into it, the biggest thing that I found was my biggest mistake when I was a recruiter. I probably did recruitment exclusively for about 7 years for one company. And I was probably that out of the box recruiter who was just moving so fast that like I wasn't attention to details. If I could go back and tell my younger self in the recruitment side as to what I would do, I would 100% spend more time becoming an expert in the people I'm recruiting, because there were people sitting to the left and right of me who were far better than I was. And my close rate was horrendous. I couldn't even give you the data on this, but my close rate was so low because I just didn't know how to properly consult. I was an order taker, working my butt off kind of person, send more cans than I need to. And I had to develop that skill of posturing and consulting in a way to kind of manage expectations. I was so bad at that from a recruiting side and the sales side. But one thing I have is I have a lot of grit to just figure it out eventually. And I probably was able to keep myself going through just kind of extra effort. But that was my biggest hurdle, I think, as a recruiter when I got to.
And I think that's the same for most great recruiters, is that transition from order taker and transactional recruitment mindset into, you know, the concept that this basically is the sum of all the relationships that you have. Yeah. And it's about building networks of people that can refer you, good people, intelligence, market information, etc. You don't want to be one of these purple squirrel hunters, do you? That every single rec, you're chasing off after people that you've never had to recruit before, because you'll stress yourself out and yep. You'll sentence yourself to a lifetime of just cold outreach. And who wants to do that, you know?
Just a very quick message about my sponsor, Great Recruiters. It's an incredible platform that allows you to build your online reputation as a great recruiter by collecting and leveraging your client, candidate, and place talent reviews. The Great Recruiters platform automates the review gathering process friction-free and turns those reviews into a goldmine of leverageable recruiting assets. It's absolutely genius. If you'd like to hear more, just ping me or Adam Conrad at Great Recruiters to set up a quick demo, or get 2 months free by visiting greatrecruiters.com/trailblazers. Thanks.
Do you have any feelings about the phrase hire for attitude, train for skills? Is that something that you sometimes use to push back on your clients and say, would you consider somebody with a shortfall of skills, but maybe, you know, who's long on approach and attitude and, you know, strategy?
First of all, I'm a big believer in that, and I'm glad you brought it up. But I often, one of the things we've adopted and started the habit of doing, not every time, but it's a growing habit for us, is we do, like, say, a discovery call. We start to understand the intake. And then we kind of reserve the right before we start to do a little research and come back to them on a follow-up call and tell them what we found. And the idea is, I feel like that gives the ability to consult further and say, hey, based on what you've requested and the parameters you've given us, here's what our initial research shows. And here's what the potential asking is for some of these candidates. And, you know, now I need to know, where are you flexible? And what I've found is that a lot of the clients we work with need some form of proof. They need to be able to see who we've been talking to and what we're discussing, and to be able to say that, because a lot of times when you say that to an intake call, they're just like, yeah, but, and we just need to find out where's the flexibility, you know, it's usually that kind of price, quality, speed matrix. Are you willing to flex on your compensation? Are you willing to flex on, you know, years of experience? And I think I've listened to a podcast recently where this is, you know, the hiring manager's love language is speed. And, you know, assuming that's still the case, then we need to make sure that we're getting the others properly done. But I've seen that when what the client has requested, the market's not offering, meaning the talent market is not matching it, then we have to come back and ask that question you just referenced, which was, hey, why don't we lessen those skills and actually look more in attitude? And one thing that's helped us a lot is I've started to challenge clients on measurable questions that we can use when interviewing our candidates for them. And I've found that many clients, for some reason, have a hard time measuring that. So I'll give you one common thing. It is a common phrase that a client say, well, for a superstar, for an all-star, for a, put in the cliche phrase, I would be willing to pay X. Well, in the past, we were like, okay. Now my next question is, thanks to Casey, is We'll define what a superstar is. What's an all-star? What does that look like? Who on your team is an all-star? Why did you feel that way, right? You know, and you start asking that and you start to realize that, like, a lot of clients, we assume that they know what they're doing. I found there's a lot of client managers we deal with that don't know what they're doing. They're coming in it. I always reference it to Property Brothers. If you ever watch the Property Brothers, you know, they come in there and someone's like, yeah, this is my budget. I want these things. And they show them a home, everything they want, and they can't afford it. And then they come back and they show them, well, hey, well, you know, we could build this home for you. We could renovate this home for you and give you everything you want within your budget. And they're like, oh, okay. But you had to show them the home they couldn't afford first. And we find quite often that that helps reset the expectation to show them the candidate they want that they can't afford, and then go back to it and say, now you mentioned all-star, but let's define what you really mean, you know? So,
yeah. And I think if you've got a relationship with a client where you're empowered to be able to go back to them and say, look, what you're looking for is not available in the current market. We're going to have to reset expectations. And if they're willing to listen to that, then you've got a really decent client and you've done a really good job up front. I used to find that benchmarking candidates very early on was a great way of getting the truth out of hiring managers, because it's one thing sitting down and listening to a hiring manager reel off their shopping list of skills and experience that they require. But then if you intercept their sort of thought patterns with an actual candidate and say, you know, talk me through the way you would evaluate a candidate. Look at this profile on LinkedIn, maybe send them 5 or 6 links to profiles on LinkedIn and say, talk me through what you're thinking and how you're evaluating these candidates as you measure them for suitability for a first interview. And that's a really good way of getting inside their head and finding out some of their hot buttons as well.
Ooh, that's a good one, Marcus. I like that. Like being able to reference how they would evaluate that based on this profile. Yeah, we've started the idea of using what we call calibration calls, which is that's kind of what that would be. And we got that from another company that we've done work with, Hitch Partners, but they in that calibration, it just is making sure that what we're searching for was what they wanted. And now you just gave me a nice one, which was asking them, how would you evaluate this person if you're looking at this profile? I'm going to add that for sure. So.
Yeah, because sometimes they don't reveal their personal hot buttons. When you get to see a resume or a profile through their own personal lens subjectively, then that sometimes uncovers wants and needs that weren't necessarily uncovered in the original sort of official intake call. So,
yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting about it, I think I told you at the beginning that my wife and I are kind of looking for a home right now. We're looking to, you know, to buy a new home. I, as a recruiter who's a consultant who mentioned all these things I just told you, right? I would think that working with a real estate agent that I would be a better customer for that real estate agent, because based on some of the things I have to deal with as a recruiter. But wouldn't you know, just like any prospect, I go in with this list of things I want. The real estate agent shows me a bunch of them. I look at them. And all of a sudden, after 5, 6 homes, I get some clarity as to what I want and don't want. Like I had to go put in that time and I had to then come back and say, you know what? I can't realize what we really need is this or want this. And I've probably made 3 iterations to what I believe we want over a 1-month period through that process. And I just wonder if he could have asked enough questions for me to get there. I don't think he could have. I think I had to go see some things such as, in our case, as recruiters, seeing profiles and going, okay, I get that. And I think that's a big piece, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Show, don't tell, maybe.
Yeah.
So what about automation? Let's finish this conversation off on some automation chat, because obviously the hot topic of 2023 is ChatGPT and, you know, and using AI in the recruiting process. Is this something that your team is addressing at all? And if so, you know, do you have any like use cases or success cases that you can share?
So I don't mean success cases. We did a training collectively about 2 weeks ago where I had ChatGPT up and we just went through a series of different things that we thought could be problems that we have that could help us solve them better, whether it be sending a message to a particular kind of candidate, you know, uploading a profile and saying, hey, could it do this? Could it send an accurate message to help compel someone? You know, writing a job description properly. We found it to be useful, but we haven't made the habit of it. And we haven't seen it in any way or how it actually has impacted our business positively. Now, one thing I have done is in the past, I would write blog articles. And I have actually turned around and asked ChatGPT to write me a blog article about a certain topic. And I like the way it writes. It certainly pulls in some good information. But the only thing I've noticed is that it's formatting in that way is standardized. You know, it's almost like an old book report. It starts off with the introduction, ends with the conclusion. Every one of them that I asked it to write would say at the last paragraph, in conclusion, and it would go to that format. So it felt stale. I was like, okay, the information's right, but it was just stale. So if, once again, if you're talking about SEO and content creation and being able to put more data to basically drive various social algorithms your way, I'd say put ChatGPT to work for sure. I mean, because it's, you're just producing more data on the web. But if you're trying to do something that's personalized, I just haven't been able to get there with ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's coming. But I think you're right. You can spot an AI written passage. I've tried a couple of times to, you know, generate some stuff for LinkedIn, and it definitely, you can definitely feel that it's written not necessarily by a human being. And I think that's probably the reason why, because it's formatted so similarly every time it churns it out. So I know that you are traditionally a contingency recruitment agency, but that you have recently sort of published and you are offering other options, and that perhaps your mindset is moving towards other ways of skinning this cat. Talk to me about how you feel about contingency recruitment versus contained recruitment versus retained. You know, is it still worth it today to offer contingent services, or are we just setting ourselves up for failure when we've got such a small percentage of chance for success?
I would love to see the rise of agency recruiters just start to put contingent to the side and say we're no longer offering it. I would encourage all agency recruiters to rise up together and to say, forget that. We're going contained or retained, because it's a hard business. I mean, there's C-level departments in companies, obviously, now that we didn't see 10 years ago, dedicated just to recruitment. You know, and so it's an entire function within itself. And for that purpose, I think that with the amount of time and effort that we've spent to become good sourcers and researchers, first of all, past that, then to become good consultants, and then be able to offer different products. You know, I'm just seeing a myriad of different, call it, entry points into the recruitment market to solve problems for these employers that is not just contingent recruiting. Because if not, I would say, I don't care if a company's going to pay me 40% or 20%. You know, like if it's going to take long and the risk is too high, I just don't see the value in it. And we're already making our move away from that. And I feel confident in it, and I'm excited about it. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think as a contingent recruiter, you're underselling your services. You're going to a company and saying, I'll work for free until such time as I find you a candidate that you think's perfect, because they won't settle for anything less. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, this sounds like a great deal. You're going to work for me for free until you find me a perfect candidate. And by the way, you know, we've employed several other agencies who failed on this search. And so then you're off on this purple squirrel hunt, aren't you? And so I actually think what you said at the beginning of that, agencies, we should all rise up and say, look, we're no longer going to offer our services for free. And I think when you cross that bridge with a client and say, look, if you put some money down, okay, if you pay us to get out of the gate on this, you know, we'll put the A team on it, and we've both got skin in the game. And what are we going to do? We're going to work our hardest to find you the very best candidate. And we're going to go out there and we're going to source passive candidates. We're going to go headhunting. We're not just going to run an ad, which is what a lot of contingency recruitment agencies do, and then just, you know, lob a few resumes over the fence when they come along. And so I actually think that there's a ton in it for the clients as well as the agencies as well. And it's just, it's up to the agencies to sort of buckle up and say, what we provide is value and valuable, and we mustn't sell ourselves short. We've got to present this to the client and say, look, if you want us to get out of bed on this and do all the things that we do and put all the time and effort and use all the tools that we've invested in and the people, then you've got to have some skin in the game. And then, as I've said on the podcast before, it changes the dynamic of the relationship completely, from them betting on you to lose as a contingency recruiter to betting on you to win as a contained or retained recruiter. Because once, you know, they've written you that check, they want to hire from you.
I agree. I've asked clients in the intake on a contingent search before. I've asked them the question, do you want us to fill this job? Yeah. And I asked them that. And the answer almost immediately, you can tell from the way they started. If it's if it's not a firm, absolutely, and here's why, and here's our pain in restating it, and why this partnership is working, then, I mean, run away from it. Because I get a lot of like, well, we certainly would like it if you did. And I'm like, well, I don't take on business to try. I think on business yeah. that I know we can complete for you. I wouldn't want you to engage us without that. So
I actually love that question. And I don't think I've ever asked that question. Do you want us to fill this role? Do you want us to fill this role?
Yeah.
You know, because if you're on contingent, then the chances are it's out to a few other agencies as well. And you've got like a 1 in 5 chance of filling it anyway, which I don't think are particularly good odds, right?
Yeah. I even challenged a company a few weeks ago. I said, now, keep in mind, if I send you a candidate that another recruiting agency has already sent and you hire them, we'll invoice you for our fees. And I said, well, how do you usually handle when 2 people send it? Like, well, we give it to the first agency to send it. I said, well, I don't know when, no part of my contract does it say that I'm in a race. And there's no part of my contract does it say that I signed up to do this job quickly. You want me to do it accurately and professionally, which is what I'm doing. If you engage 2 recruiting agencies and we send the same candidate, unfortunately, you're going to be paying 2 times. And I got to tell you, I've successfully helped 2 companies turn that around and go, okay, we'll go exclusive then. But they seem to think that they're going to engage 5 companies at the same time. And I'm like, that's fine, yeah. but I'm still going to expect payment for our service. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good point at which you can sort of, you know, put your foot down and say, look, this isn't going to work on a contingent basis. We want to work exclusively. And these are some of the reasons why. And yeah, I mean, speed might be a part of their requirement, but I mean, you know, they want quality. They don't just want speed. Quality is always what they're looking for.
I agree. I totally agree. And I'll say one last thing, and I know we're getting to the end. I have also seen this to be not ever all across the board, but because of the contingent, this is one of the reasons why we've had a contingent is I do see some agencies that are just sending resumes, LinkedIn profiles to maybe get submission rights on candidates without actually having relationship development, having done the heavy lifting. And so one of the things that we sell to our clients is that, hey, I know this should go without saying, but consent is a big piece of what we do. We have both written or audio consent from all of our candidates that we have described your company, your opportunity, and they've given us the verbal okay. And I push all employers to ask all their agency recruiters to get that same consent because not everyone operates with the same ethical value, you know?
Right. Yeah. They just want to get a point on the board and make that submission sometimes without even speaking to the candidate first, which is to me seems ridiculous, but it does happen quite a lot.
It does.
It's crazy.
It's because of the rules of the game. And I think it's an education of the employers that the rules need to change, or me as an agency needs to play a different game, which is not the contingency, but the retained game. So
good stuff. Well, Patrick Surmeyer, thank you very much for helping me put the recruiting world to rights once again. Very interesting conversation. I really appreciate you coming along to the podcast today, and we'll stay in touch and speak again soon.
Got it. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Marcus.
Okay. Cheers.